Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. That's it. There's no more subtitle.
No.
I was trying to think of it. I want to say Binge and Nerd so bad.
That's not it. That's not it. We retired it.
No, I know.
Binge and Nerd got me too'd.
That's true. R.I.P. That Binge and Nerd, as the kids would say. We've got an action-packed episode for you folks. For once in the Streaming Things oeuvre, as Cruella would say, we promised something.
You really can't say the word oeuvre without going oeuvre. I do the same thing.
No, that's how it's pronounced. Oeuvre.
Oeuvre.
Darling, look at my oeuvre. Put your oeuvre away. This is public.
Oh, sir. Heavens.
Your balls are showing.
We've got a lot to get into. Yeah,
we promised something and we delivered it, believe it or not.
Wow. So
we
much stuff.
Told you we were going to watch both A Quiet Place Part 2. I don't think it's part. I think it's just 2. And
it is Part 2.
Oh, there we go. I nailed it. Just part muscle two. Memory. And Cruella. And we watched both of them. And we're going to discuss them here this evening after a robust Streaming Things. Wait, crossing streams.
During a robust Streaming thing, is what you meant.
Yeah. And check the gate segment. So that's what's in store for you. We're not going to burden you, though. We're going to make it our normal overly long episode. Nothing overly, overly long. We don't want to double up on the overly. So if you're new here, you picked a great episode to tune in first. I would like to petition the audience for a thing. If you would like to help the show in a way that costs you nothing, but a few moments of time, and we just watched Cruella, so I'm not going to stop talking like this any point.
Darling.
It's wonderful,
I
darling.
Was just feeding the dog.
Please, sir, you want some of that good, good?
I was sitting at the microphones in the room, and Penny or Andy went to go feed Penny his dog, and I hear you in the kitchen going, "What say you, Penny? What say you?"
Please, sir, I want some crumpets.
Is that a real thing that Andy was doing?
Yeah, he was actually doing that.
That's how you have to talk to your dog. She's only trained in Victorian English. So like how German shepherds respond to German commands. Mm-hmm. That's how Penny responds. And Penny's even kind of named in a Victorian English way, right?
Penny. So. Hello, Penny.
Hello.
Hello, Penny.
But back to my overture. I petition the audience.
We said her name too many times. Now she's standing at the table.
What's going on? Petition the audience to help us in a way that costs you nothing but a few moments of time. Please take a moment to review our podcast, if you would. Obviously, the 5 stars are implied, but I'm going to make that explicit if it's not. We would prefer the 5-star rating. But that very much helps us out. And we actually got a review pretty recently in late April that we never read. So I want to read it real quick, if you guys don't mind.
I'll allow it.
This comes from user UC Sadie 08. I imagine she graduated from the University of Cincinnati. circa 08, but I could be reading the username wrong. But that might not be it at all.
Maybe something completely different.
It's interpretable. But anyway, he or she writes, love this podcast and have been listening for years. 3 exclamation points.
Mm.
I don't have many people I can nerd out with about movies/shows. So this is my outlet now. I've seen so many shows/films due to listening that I probably wouldn't have even given a chance beforehand. If you're looking for hysterical, nerdy, down-to-earth hosts, deep and light analysis of film or shows, you won't be disappointed. And there you go.
I hope you, the listener, agree with UC Sadie.
How kind.
And if you're a new listener, I hope, yeah, you agree later on once you've,
yeah,
you know, collected some evidence.
Yeah, I mean, you're in for a treat. Are you calling UC Sadie a liar, listener?
How dare you?
How dare you? UC Sadie is a saint.
So join UC Sadie in reviewing and rating our podcast. That helps people find us. Tell your friends and family about it. Unless that's the weird right-wing family at Thanksgiving. You don't have to tell them. I don't think they're going to like our show very much.
Maybe not.
But they could hate listen to it.
That's true. That's a thing. That's a genre that people do.
As long as they don't hear this one and decide to review the show, I'm not going to stop talking like this the entire time. I'm not doing it on purpose the entire time. Anyway, that was more like a Knives Out, Daniel Craig-ish, Andy. You can do it.
Oh, okay. Just pretend, try to do British and you land on Georgian.
Andy just has certain things he has to strive for, and by falling short, he will reach his subconscious goal.
It's all in you, Andy. You just have to find the right avenues to get there.
I don't know what he has to strive for to nail Russian, though.
That is a journey I am excited to be a part of. I can't wait till we get there. Like, years from now,
Jamaican.
Years from now, you're going to try to do a Bob Marley, and it's going to come out at Khrushchev, and it's going to be wonderful.
Don't worry, I'll be happy. I did it. Anyway,
I have something to implore the listener.
Okay, there you go.
Listener, we have a voicemail. Call us and leave a voicemail so we can hear your voices. And you can call us about anything. It could be like questions about who we are, what movies we like, what movies you like, experiences you have regarding movies. It could be whatever. It could be a prank call. I'm pretty sure we got pranked by Mr. Slug a couple weeks ago. But if you want to do that, you can. The phone number is 859-757-4051. Again, that's 859-757-4051.
And if you're old-fashioned, you can also email us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. We always love reading your emails. And if we do get any emails, we're going to read them in the Cruella de Vil voice.
I like the idea that being old-fashioned is using email as opposed to a telephone.
Yeah, voicemail is a new feature. I think that would you call it, Steve, an answering machine? I mean,
that's true.
There's nothing more futuristic than a machine
that answers.
I miss like the recording, getting to record the message for voicemail back in the day. I mean, you can still do it now, but if you do it,
yeah, we did it for this voicemail.
Kind of a chode. Okay, well, we're kind of.
You don't have a pre-recorded voicemail greeting on your cell phone?
I don't. No.
I don't either.
I do, and I would posit that I am not a chode.
Well, if you get calls for work, that's different. So, 100%. You know, you need to say like, "Hey, this is Chris from wherever."
Also, I'm pretty sure I still have the music ringback that was defaulted on my phone like 15 years ago, and I don't know how to change it. So it's still like,
please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
And the music is just, da, 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 da. It's just classical music, and I don't know how it became that. So
you're still paying for it.
Am I?
Probably.
Ringbacks cost money.
They did back in the day. Yeah.
Wasn't yours Led Zeppelin?
I don't know if I ever did a ring back.
I think it was like When the Levee Breaks.
That would be dope.
Pretty sure.
I'd like to think that's something.
I think it was Led Zeppelin When the Levee Breaks. Yeah.
And he's bringing up his phone right now to change it.
No, that was on his chocolate.
Chocolates?
Back in the day.
Yeah. Wow.
Me and my siblings recorded the voicemail for my parents' answering machine, and we played Fun, Fun, Fun by the Beach Boys. And it was like, hi, this is Andy, and I'm Adam, and I'm Aaron, and you've reached the Casson family. And it was like this cacophony of music in the background. And one of the first voicemails we got was like, it was like my aunt or something. You need to change that horrendous voicemail message.
Shut up, Aunt Susie.
You're not invited to the reunion.
That's why we don't talk to you. Stop giving us $5 for our birthday.
It's 1996.
So my wife... Major digression here. We apologize. My wife, her birthday was in April, and she every year from her stepmother's mother receives a check for $5.
That's a lot of money.
Not only is it only $5, which is whatever, it's a check. So it's like annoying to have to, anyway.
You have to deposit that.
For our elderly listeners, stop doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about inflation, but it's
that
a thing.
That check almost cost you as much as the $5
that's
that you
a thing. Anywhoozle. Well, that brings us to our Crossing Streams segment, where we dive into the things that we've been doing since last we met. Andrew, regale us.
So earlier today, I was pumping gas.
Whoa.
Have you guys heard of something called Speedway TV?
I have. I've experienced it.
The word of the
for
day.
For our international listeners, explain it.
Well, sometimes when you have to pump gas,
petrol?
Petrol. An annoyingly loud commercial will pop up on the screen for Rachel Menounos' Live Better Daily or something. The word of the day today was anathema. Oh. In case you were curious, which is something that one vehemently hates. So it is anathema to me.
Word of the day that is on that gas station is definitely the word of the day for a solid month at least, because they are not updating those videos every day.
Right. Right. Yeah, no kidding.
And also, did you mean Maria Menounos?
It's Maria.
I couldn't remember. It popped up and I was like, God, she really, how much is she paying for to blow it up every time I try to pump gas?
Dude, Maria Menounos pops up in the most random places. Like she shows up on the screen when I'm pumping gas. She shows up on the screen sometimes when you're right before you see a movie in a movie theater.
I'm just glad I got the name Menounos right.
I mean that is the one that I am proud of you for, that one.
Thanks guys.
It sounds like a delicious imported cereal. A bowl of Menounos.
So I honestly have not really been streaming anything this week. I've been still dealing with family stuff. And have not really had the time. I realized that I did not bring up that a couple weeks back I watched Stranger Than Fiction. And what made me think of it was watching Cruella with you guys today, because that features Emma Thompson as one of the leads. Basically, the story is this guy lives this very boring life, and he starts to hear a narrator in his head, and then eventually, like, comes to realize that it's not just a voice in his head, but it's actually someone actively narrating his life, and they're correct about the things that they're saying. He goes to visit a professor who's played by Dustin Hoffman, and I fucking love Dustin Hoffman.
Who doesn't?
But who is actively trying to help him figure out, like, are you living in a comedy or a tragedy? And there's also a love story with Maggie Gyllenhaal playing this baker. Wonderful, wonderful movie. Emma Thompson is wonderful in it as well.
Will Ferrell stars.
Will Ferrell does star. Yeah, I left that part out. Will Ferrell does star.
Who cares about the star?
Star-studded cast. And that movie blew my mind back in the day, and I revisited it recently, and it super holds up. I really, really enjoy that. There's lots of fun, creative things they do with the concept of having somebody narrating your life. Not just narrating, but actively writing your life. So I actively recommend that people go see that if they haven't. It is streamable on Netflix.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. That movie introduced me to the concept of Will Ferrell playing in something that's not necessarily a comedy. Mm-hmm. And also it introduced me to the band Spoon. So
Spoon rocks.
Yeah. That was the first movie I remember hearing, like, oh, I like this. Did I like this beat.
The underdog. Like, that's the one that their biggest breakout.
That's the way we get by. That one, yeah.
That's a good one.
That's the opening song, I think.
Didn't Spoon do like I turn my camera on? Remember that song?
I don't remember that one.
Hold on, I'll find it when you're busy talking later.
Okay.
Yes,
that is them.
Turn my camera on the way.
Yeah, I'm gonna listen to them on the way home. I used to love that band.
I saw them live 2 years ago. They opened for Cage the Elephant. And
what is live? It's been so long.
Back in the before times. I saw them live. They opened for Cage the Elephant and Beck, and it was very much like the like I used to play in a band and play shows and stuff, and a couple of times we opened for other local bands that were much bigger than us, and we were kind of the go and get a beer band, which always kind of sucks. You know, I mean, like, you're up there rocking out and nobody's really, they're kind of milling about,
going away from the
that's
stage.
That's how it was for Spoon, and I'm standing there like, I went and got like my beer or whatever. And then I was walking along and I started to hear music. I was like, they're fucking starting, guys. And everybody's like looking at the merch. I was like, it's Spoon. Nobody gives a
Come
shit.
Come on, guys, Spoon.
But they rocked. Yeah,
but if you're not careful, every now and then a band will book an opener that rocks harder than them. And then that's a very shitty thing.
That happened to Beck.
Yeah.
Beck had to follow up Cage the Elephant and like half the young kids left.
Same thing happened with me. I watched Cage the Elephant open for the Black Keys.
Oh, no.
And the Black Keys is one of my favorite bands of all time. But they are a chill, bluesy two piece for the most part. And they played directly after Cage the Elephant, who are like a...
It's like seeing Rolling Stones in their prime. They're like, they're crazy on stage. They're
It's like a throwback to the early 90s, maybe. Just like this really, but grunge, but if they could play their instruments really, really well. Mm-hmm. Like if everyone in the band were Dave Grohl, what it's like, and that's Cage the Elephant. Yeah, they just, you know, crowd surfed and jumped around like crazy, broke guitars. It was awesome. And then Black Keys just came out and like leaned against the stool and, you know, kept tempo. And I was like, oh no, we're all sweaty and jacked up. Everybody just did like all their powder. You know what I mean? In the first show. And they're like, oh no, where's the rock? You know, but that was a great show. I love that. Good times. Good times. That was many years ago.
But yeah, that's all I've been streaming.
Steve? What have you been doing? Carry the torch.
Well, let me grab it from Andy. So I also haven't been streaming a lot of things that's new.
Give me the torch.
So a lot of the things I'm going to talk about are a little bit of recap. So sure. I finished MODOK on Hulu. I promise you guys I would tell you my full review of the show. And I think overall the show is passable.
Wonderful news.
It's okay. It definitely, the last couple episodes, I feel like it finally gets to where I wanted the show to be in terms of they kind of really figure out the chemistry and relationship of the characters. But because for so much of the season, it was like, okay, I'm not really feeling the story here or like the jokes in general. There's like a couple, you know, one or two good zingers that are thrown in, but like it wasn't gelling. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the last two episodes kind of finally it gels, but it's one of those too little too late situations where I'm not at the point where I could confidently suggest people go see it.
Right.
Cause I just thought it was fine. So that was kind of a bummer. And then the other thing I streamed this week is a documentary series. You can find it on Hulu. The first two seasons are on Hulu, but you can mainly watch it on vice.com or their like YouTube channel.
Strange.
It's a Vice documentary series called Dark Side of the Ring. It's basically just a bunch of documentaries about crazy shit that has happened in wrestling. And it's really fun. Well, I say fun. It's actually...
Dude, my head went so many places. I thought like Lord of the Rings.
No, no.
And it's then Pink I thought Floyd. Like the making of The Ring, the movie. And no, super disappointed that it's wrestling.
The wrestling ring. You say that, but there's some crazy shit that has happened in wrestling that's dark. So like getting to see what essentially is a bunch of carnies
right.
talk about messed up shit that's happened. So it's this really fun mixture of like in some cases a murder mystery or like a behind the scenes, like everyone's on cocaine type documentary, but the story that is being told to you by a bunch of carnies who are like, yeah man, fuck that guy, yeah, he came at me with a knife, and it's like, I don't know if he did. but that's
still fascinating. Was yeah. there, were there any famous performers on there or
tons? It's all it's
Stone Cold Steve
people.
Austin on there.
I think he's on one episode.
Steve, do you remember filming that?
Yeah. So the season three starts with the life and death of Brian Pillman. And uh-huh. Steve Austin was a good friend of Brian Pillman. So I'm pretty sure he's on that episode. I have not seen that episode myself, but I'm pretty sure he's on that.
Regale us with what he might have said.
Fuck Brian Pillman. He came into my house with a loaded gun, tried to hold. Actually, I broke into his house. He had a loaded gun. I got my mystery. You know what? I'm the good guy in this story. Not him. Hell yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks,
we
buddy.
Always appreciate when you drop in.
I specifically this week watched the Ultimate Warrior episode, which was okay. called The Rise and Fall of the Ultimate Warrior. And it basically goes into, you know, how the Ultimate Warrior was one of the greatest wrestling icons of the 90s. You know, every kid loved him. He was like a living, breathing cartoon character. But in real life, he's a dick. You know, he's like a super far right wing asshole that like hates gay people and, you know, he's been filmed saying really awful shit and he's just like very unprofessional to people and like all the wrestlers like hate him and think he's like this trashy, no talented, egotistical monster who kind of like bought into the his own legend, you know? And so it was kind of fun.
He's like the Baroness von Hellman of WWE.
He is.
E world, right?
He really is.
He really is, Chris.
I'd love to see the biopic starring Emma Thompson.
Fun fact, his original wrestling name was the Dingo Warrior, so he also liked dogs.
Was he Australian?
No.
Because I've...
And a lot of people were very confused as to why he was called Dingo Warrior, which is why they changed it to Ultimate Warrior when he actually got famous. But no, he had this really weird... he died in a very poetic fashion where he like... was welcomed back into the wrestling world and like brought him into the Hall of Fame. And he made like his amends with a lot of people where he's like, I'm real sorry for being an asshole. And then he died like the next night, like after he like had this big, like I'm back and every man beats his last beat of his heart. And so live life every day. And then he died the next day. Wow. And it's really wild. But it's a good documentary show. It's great. If you really want a good laugh, watch the New Jack episode. Cause that guy's insane, but in like a funny way. Like, he's a total piece of shit person, but, like, he's very funny. And sadly, he died, like, last week, I think. But,
if you want a good laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, Dark Side of the Ring, if you're interested in any of that, I know a lot of people who, like, don't watch wrestling, but they love that type of My Favorite Murder or mystery type documentary sure. series. Like, you would still love it because it's an insane batshit carny world. And it's just that part of it is... half the reason why I find it entertaining, but like that is what I've been streaming.
The Tiger King of wrestling.
Yeah. The Tiger King should be in wrestling in all honesty.
Yeah.
God damn you, Carol Baskin. I want you this Sunday night in a steel cage. I'm breaking out of prison to get you, Carol Baskin.
100%. He is a character. That's what they say.
Chris, what have you been streaming?
I've been streaming a few things. I had an eventful week on the old tube, as they say. I rented Wrath of Man, which is the new Guy Ritchie film starring...
with Jason Statham.
Jason Statham, yeah. You call him Statham's?
Yep.
I mean, that's a good enough name. And it's everything you'd expect from a Guy Ritchie film starring Jason Statham. I mean, Jason Statham's a superhero-esque... bad boy. I actually watched it with my son.
Ooh, a bad boy.
Was a bad
boy. Was it
boy.
A return to form, like people said?
No. Mm. No.
A return to form for whom?
Guy Ritchie.
Oh, okay.
Who's kind of, like, keeps making movies that they get middling reviews, but has not really come back since, like,
I liked The Gentleman quite a lot. In fact, more than Wrath of Man.
Really?
Okay. So, yeah. And I wouldn't say, I don't know. That's an interesting question, maybe to pose for a later episode. Has Guy Ritchie left his form and returned to it?
Well, I mean, like Revolver and like
yeah, I mean,
Arthur and stuff.
Those were early aughts. I think he's honestly, I think that's always been his oeuvre is very hit or miss. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You've got it's not Lock, Stock or Snatch for sure. And he's got the money that he started getting around Sherlock Holmes era. But I mean, Wrath of Man, it's good, but it's very strange. So it's about it's very creatively structured. I'm stuttering because I don't want to spoil anything. Essentially, if I don't know if you've seen any trailers or anything, but I'll just broadly say that Jason Statham plays a villainous type character. Like the things he does in life are not good things. And somebody has harmed a loved one of his. And so he's out for revenge, but throughout most of the film, you don't know the details of that or really who he is. And it's quite interesting. There's some really fun moments and it almost plays with the mythos of Jason Statham and what he is. So it's interesting from that level. If you're a longtime fan of Guy Ritchie and you remember like skinny, super limey Jason Statham from the 90s and who has become through like Fast and Furious action star Jason Statham. So now like when he walks into a room, everybody's fighting and shit. And then they look over and see Jason and they all like put down their pool sticks and run away. Do you know what I mean? But you don't know who he is in the film yet. So you're like kind of confused, but it's almost funny because you know, he's playing with the fact that this is Jason Statham. We better run. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And he's like,
guy.
And I made him.
I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a regular guy trying to play pool. It's 2 minutes, 5 minutes ago. Why'd everybody go running away? I'm so lonely. Sure, I got buff and got rid of my swimsuit body, but I'm Jason Statham, damn it.
My real name's Richard.
It's a megalodon.
I used to be a diver.
I'm a symbol for the follically challenged everywhere.
Have you ever seen the videos of him when he was like a professional diver?
Yes, he's a phenomenal diver.
Yeah, it's really good.
Blows your mind.
Impressive. And he's very flexible. I just want to throw that out there. You know why he got the role in The Meg once you see that, of course.
The Meg might have the reach, but I'm very flexible.
So I watched Wrath of Man. And so if you're a Guy Ritchie fan, a Jason Statham fan, or just a dumb action movie fan, I do recommend it. It's a solid sit. You know, you're not going to feel like you've wasted an hour and a half or 2 hours. I also read a book, believe it or not.
I want that on my future DVD cover of any movie I make. It's a solid sit.
Yeah, I mean, this will not, quote unquote, waste your time. .. After all, what the fuck were you going to do anyway?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, that's a good point.
Honey, let's go see this one.
So I picked up a couple books. One I finished. It's called Luster, and it's written by Raven Lalani, and I believe it's her debut novel. I just want to recommend, I'm not going to tell you much about it at all, other than that it's wonderful, a beautiful, piercing slice into what it's like to be alive for a lot of people, but also a window into what it's like to be a young black woman, which obviously I know nothing about. I devoured this book. It's beautiful. Every now and then, I don't know if you read a lot, there's like different categories of books and genres, obviously, but then there's some that they actually call literature as like the genre, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you studied books in college, Andy, there's just literature was like kind of a genre, right? Like Michael Chabon, just the way that they write, they're not concerned with, you know, meticulous plotting or anything. They're really playing with the form of language. Each sentence is like a poem. And Raven writes that way, where the plot is great and you're interested in what's going to happen with the characters. But at the very same time, you're just interested in how she's going to structure the next sentence because it's so well done. And that's what I experienced reading Luster. So I highly recommend it. Andy, I'll let you borrow it if you're not reading anything. I also got Seth Rogen, more appropriate to our podcast, Seth Rogen's newest book. It's a memoir called Yearbook. I've read the first chapter, and I was telling Andy the other day, because Andy listens to a lot of audiobooks. He talks about it on the podcast a lot. That is not my bag, baby. But I have
Swedish made
been very curious. I haven't read more of the book because I'm waiting to get the audiobook on the app that Andy suggested, Libby. Because Seth Rogen actually reads the book himself. And I just, for the first time in my life, I was like, God damn, I really want to hear the audiobook version of this. I bet that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting to hear Seth Rogen's sweet laughter in my ears. But you guys should buy it. The first chapter was hilarious. It's getting rave reviews. Seth Rogen has reached some sort of mythic status in our popular culture recently, sort of approaching like how we feel about Keanu Reeves-esque. I'm very impressed with what he's done with his image, and he seems to be a very good guy. He's out just crafting vases and opening, you know, weed companies and things like that. Just very wholesome things out there doing Seth Rogen-y things. So I'm pleased with his career. I also watched yesterday the Friends reunion episode on HBO Max. Have you guys heard about this at all? That is the theme song.
I heard about it, but I don't watch Friends.
I know you're very disdainful to Friends.
Not disdainful, just not interested.
You're such a Chandler. Actually, that's more of a Monica thing. You're such a Monica.
That was such a Phoebe thing to say. That's the name of character, right?
You're such a Gunter.
Yeah.
Such a Gunter.
Yeah, you're the coffee shop purveyor. So I watched Friends. Friends was on the air, I think, from 1994 to 2004. So that was, I was in from, you know, what, fourth grade until right before I graduated high school. And so it was a big part of my life off and on. But I had a good friend. You know him. You played darts with him, Robbie D. Mm-hmm. He loved Friends, and I hung out at his house all the time. So I would go to his house and we'd start playing guitar, and then he would warm up by being like, smelly cat, what are they feeding you? Smelly cat, it's not your fault. It's a funny ass song, but that's from Friends. So it was a huge part of his life. So we'd watch it, you know, because when you're a kid, you had literally nothing to do. And we'd watch hours and hours of Friends. So Friends exited my life after that until I married Carissa. She's a huge Friends fan. She watched all 10 seasons twice in the year of the pandemic, right? And if you're married, you know what it's like. That means I watched all 10 seasons twice for the most part, right? Like, I could not believe when she started another rewatch when I, you know, I come home from work and it's like, da, 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 no one told you. You got to be fucking kidding me. You know what I mean? Like, I got so many movies I've never seen that I want to watch. Like, I've never seen Citizen Kane, honey. I need you to go upstairs and watch Friends up there.
It's the Rembrandts, right?
It is. That was on our quiz.
Yeah.
But anyway, about the reunion. So I don't know. You guys caught the Parks and Recreation kind of reunion slash pandemic special, right?
Yeah, I did watch that.
And did you guys happen to watch the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion? I think I talked about it on the show. So I watched that as well. It's a lot like all those other ones. It's, you know, if you like the show, oh, it's neat. They're all together.
It's just them sitting on like a set.
They rebuilt the Warner Brothers soundstage where they did everything exactly to a T. So you get to watch them kind of walk through literal memory lane. And then they hung out on the old couch in the coffee shop, you know, Point Perk. And they have all kinds of intercuts. It's really well done. They intercut between the actual scenes as they were filmed back in the day with them doing a new table read, you know, in the age that they are now of the exact scene and them getting like emotional and trying to recreate it. It's very fascinating. If you like celebrities and you're a fan of movie, like watching David Schwimmer interact with Jennifer Aniston, knowing who they became after that show is fascinating to me just as a lover of film.
Knowing who she became after that show.
Right. I mean, David Schwimmer was in Schindler's List.
Okay.
Schwimmer's List, right? he had a couple projects, but yeah, no one became as big as her.
He was in Band of Brothers.
Yes, absolutely. They had a couple good things, but like there's a reference. It's kind of awkward. I recommend you guys watch it. Like there's this moment where they're talking about all the guest stars that they had. Like they had Tom Selleck. They had Paul Rudd was on like 14 episodes. Mm-hmm. A lot of huge. Danny DeVito was a star for a few episodes. But then David Schwimmer looks at Jennifer and he goes, and you're guy Brad was on as well, and like he got awkward and didn't know because he knew what had happened since, and like right. She was like, yeah, Pitt was here, and it was just like fascinating for me. Like I just like sat forward on my couch like, ooh, drama. But my wife is the reason I brought it up.
As soon as they got off the air, she looked at her assistant like, kill him,
don't.
Yeah, Schwimmer disappeared.
She certainly has minions. Schwimmer looked great, by the way. He hadn't aged a day. It was crazy. I could not say the same about some of the others. But
Matt LeBlanc's all gray now.
Yeah, but it's like a pleasant way where he's just like,
he's like a silver fox.
He seems wholesome. Yeah. Whereas Matthew Perry looked like he'd been through some rough stuff.
He'd been living like Matthew
Perry. But my wife was literally in tears multiple times just watching them react and seeing them interact. And there's a Lady Gaga comes on and sings Smelly Cat with Phoebe. And it was just good, fun stuff. Made me feel good inside. It's not harmful. It's not hurting anybody, Andy, you know?
I've seen some episodes. I just don't watch the show.
I think we are on the precipice of having a Lisa Kudrow Assance.
She's been in some stuff recently. I think she's the only one that's been like recently actively working a bunch, which is interesting. I would not have called that.
LeBlanc does some
he does car TV show
on Amazon, I thought.
Well, he's had a lot of TV shows, not all of them successful in the years since. Like he was in that Joey show.
I forgot about that.
Was it called Extras that he was on? Or is that the Ricky Gervais one? It's something along those lines.
Okay.
And then that car show that you brought up. So he does stuff, but just not, you know, wildly popular.
I'm sure they're all like work, making a fine living. It's just like
Matthew Perry was second billed in that Zac Efron movie from like 10, 15 years ago. Yeah.
Well, I think the biggest thing he did were the weird assassination mob movies with Bruce Willis. He did two of them. I forget what they're called. It's terrible.
The 9 yards.
Yes.
Something yards.
Yeah. He did those, but anyhoozle, I digress. But I actually was moved to tears when Gaga, because you guys know I'm goo-goo for Gaga, and she came out and sang Smelly Cat with Phoebe, and she said, hey, basically, to paraphrase, thank you for representing the weird ones on the show, because it was a very mainstream show, and Phoebe, you know, was a goofball, and Phoebe looked at her and she said, well, thank you for carrying it after me. And anyway, it was like, because I'm a weird guy, and I was like, yeah, I love Phoebe. But yeah, anyway, that show meant a lot to me when I was a kid, and meant a great deal to my wife, and it was fun to watch. I also started watching Mythic Quest Season 2 on Apple TV Plus. Could not recommend this show more. It is just phenomenal. Rob from Always Sunny has outdone himself creating the show. I think the production value, it always amazes me how well it's
gorgeous.
Shot.
Yeah,
that's it's a gorgeous such show. A good looking show.
It's a comedy, but the cinematography is better than most things.
The video game transitional shots, the CG, It's really good. Like, it's really well done. Like, you could easily have made it corny almost on purpose and it would have still worked, but they took the time to like make the dragons and stuff beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I think that they're like somehow contractually hooked up with Ubisoft so that they.
Oh, really?
Getting so like some of the shots from season one were from For Honor.
Oh, really?
And this season, I'm not totally caught up on it yet, but so far it seemed like they created new shots for this.
Yeah. I'm really excited with what they're doing with the character. I mean, Steve did a great job talking about it, like Jill being hooked up.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I co-sign everything Steve said. My wife and I are delving into season two and we're having a great time. I love that show and I'm glad it's just as good as season one. And then to end, I'm so very sorry. The last thing, I started watching a documentary on HBO Max this morning called The Crime of the Century. It was directed by Alex Gibney, and he did a bunch of good documentaries, a bunch of big ones. But Going Clear, the Scientology blowing that one open,
oh wow,
was his as well. So The Crime of the Century is very close to my heart because, as you guys, I've talked about it many times, that I'm a recovered opioid addict. Oh. And this is about the opioid epidemic and how it was actually a crime.
Sunset Family.
By Big Pharma. Yes, the people that own the Purdue.
What's that family's name?
The original grandfather was Arthur. I forget his last name, which is the important name part. But anyway, I don't want to drag on trying to remember the guy's name. But they own Purdue, Franklin, I think it is. Purdue, the company that... And it's about how they pushed OxyContin and lied and you know, committed fraud, told everybody it wasn't addictive, and actually convinced... basically paid an FDA worker to help write the application for approval. He ended up working for the Purdue company a year after it got approved. And that looks super suspicious, but they got away with it. And not only that, I think it's fascinating. This I did not know because I was on the front lines, you know, using it. So I know very well what happened to America once that they successfully started prescribing this. I mean, you're talking little old ladies prescribed like 1200 milligrams a day of OxyContin. Saying that, hey, you can use as much as you want because it's not addictive and there's no extra chemicals in it like acetaminophen or ibuprofen, so it can't hurt you. Like, that's what they were telling doctors. And which, if you don't know, if you've never used drugs, good on you. That's a shitload.
Yeah.
Of
1200 is a mega shitload.
Far more than you need.
Dude, I remember back in the day before all this stuff started blowing up, like that, it was shorthand, like, you want to take some OxyContin? You feeling bad? Like, mm-hmm. Let's get some OxyContin. And then it was just kind of like, yeah.
No, I just have a cold.
It's like, well, here's
it'll work. It'll work.
OxyContin.
Yeah, it's insane what they got away with.
Eat the OxyContin.
Eat it. Absolute insanity. And, The argument of the documentary is that this is the crime of the century, not like a crisis, but an actual crime that was committed that people are getting away with.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating to me is how they changed the zeitgeist of medical care. Like, Andy, your sister's a nurse. And so pain management, quote unquote, is what they helped invent. That was their propaganda to push OxyContin. Like, hey, we're not treating people's pain enough. The pain itself, whatever caused it, needs to be treated, but also the pain itself is not being treated. We're being cruel. Give them OxyContin. Mm-hmm. So that when you go to the doctor in America, if you're overseas, I doubt they do this. Maybe they do. You get this little chart from 1 to 10 with an increasingly perturbed looking smiley face as it goes up the scale. And the nurse will ask you, which of these upset little faces are you right now? Right. That whole thing was invented in the late 90s, early aughts during this like a giant OxyContin push. Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that, you know what I mean? That coincided with what eventually happened to me. Do you know what I mean?
They still ask that. Like when I broke my
finger.
That's
what I mean.
Pain management clinics are absolutely still a thing. When I broke the piss out of my finger, I got prescribed a painkiller and like they knew my medical history and stuff. And so it's like, you know, you don't have to take this, but it is an option. And I'm like, yeah, my finger's bent. And at a 90 degree angle, I'm going to take it.
So did Dr. Slaughter show you the chart?
Right. No, but they do ask. But they're much more limited now on like how they're allowed to prescribe it. And he said something like that, beyond a certain point that if I'm continuing to have pain that they wouldn't be able to help me, I would have to go to like a pain management guy. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that. But,
But it was just interesting to me that kind of changed the whole landscape of healthcare here, the whole pain management thing in general. So I haven't finished it. There's a two-part series. I finished the first part. So I just wanted to throw that out there. If you're curious about the most recent way in which America went to the shitter. Because, I mean, we're still being affected to this day.
Oh, that's like fourth or fifth way down the line way.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, so that's the crime of the century. It's available to stream on HBO Max. Now let's move into our Check the Gate segment. Roll that footage, Steve. All right, so Check the Gate is the weekly segment wherein we, streaming things, give you, the listener, all of the hottest, steamiest, freshest takes in movie and TV news that you can get literally anywhere else.
You heard it here third.
That's right. So this week, did you guys happen to check out the Last Night in Soho trailer that was dropped on Tuesday?
Fuck yes.
Steve? Oh, yeah. All right. Now, you know, I say it every week and it's been becoming increasingly untrue, but I try not to watch trailers. But this has been my most, I think we talked about when we, you know, opened this new season of streaming things and we talked about the things we were most excited about in the coming year or two. Last Night in Soho was very high, if not number one on my list. And so I really couldn't resist. And everybody was talking about it. So I was like, I want to join the talk. I want to be in the club.
Yeah.
In the club.
Well, everyone at this table are huge fans of Edgar Wright. So, yes, of course, anything comes out with Edgar Wright, it's like, yes, please, but pour it into my eyes.
He liked one of my tweets the other day.
You've made it.
And I've said that on the show before. And I just want to tell our new listeners that Edgar Wright liked one of my tweets. The trailer was extremely well done, not just because the film looks gorgeous and a huge departure for what Edgar Wright typically does. So I'm very curious about that, but it revealed nothing about the film to me. Like, I still have no idea what it's about. Right. And I love that he managed to do that. He's a genius. Damn it.
I got Woody Allen.
You got me too, buddy. When I watched it,
Midnight in Paris vibes. Have you guys seen that film?
Yes. Somebody tweeted like, oh, it's a horror film, Midnight in Paris or something like that.
That was a common thing I saw saying was the horror of that.
Oh, see, I thought that was a fresh take, but that's cool.
Yeah, no. But that's what Check the Gate's for, Andy. You heard it here third.
Fair enough.
True to form.
So I wanted to bring that up.
No, it looks gorgeous.
You guys probably, I mean, everybody in the mom was talking McKenzie, about it.
That was a girl from Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, Andy pointed that out and he called me. I was like, really?
Which girl? The girl in the attic?
The one that's not Anya Taylor-Joy.
That's Anne Frank.
But yes, the girl in the attic.
Damn it, that was inappropriate. Yes. Nailed it. So Amazon bought MGM Studios for upwards of $9 billion almost. Did you guys hear about that?
I did.
What do you think of that?
It's kind of sad. Like, having just watched Mank recently, where very much steeped in the old-timey Hollywood era, the golden age, if you will. That movie made me nostalgic for a time period that I didn't live in. And then to see like one of the pillars, like if there was a Mount Rushmore of these great Hollywood companies, MGM would be up there. Mm-hmm. And now they're just swallowed up by the fucking Silicon Valley bros. And that's crazy.
Well, I feel like MGM as a movie studio has, like, it's been, I feel like, constant for the past 20 years. You would read the news, MGM going bankrupt, MGM losing all this money, MGM, like, I feel like they've been on death's doorstep for most of my life, because I feel like that's always coming to be. And Amazon, I'm sure, purchased them because they want that sweet, sweet GoldenEye 007 money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James Bond is the only IP, maybe Rocky.
But the funny
thing, I felt day, like the Madonna banger, you know what I'm saying?
The funny thing is about 007 is, like, even though MGM makes those movies, they don't have creative control over them. It's the Broccoli family, right?
I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, that's beyond my purview. But
regardless,
they could have exclusive streaming rights for ad infinitum for the entire James Bond
and
franchise.
And I'm sure they'll find something and air something, but I think it's, I'm sure there's some exec at Amazon who's like, let's get 007. We can make whatever we want, but really they have to run it by this family that has full control over
maybe,
that
but I think Bezos and the crew are much more savvy than that, and there's got to be something to it. You know, that just seems like a steep price. As long as that studio has been around, it didn't seem as like, much of a cash grab to me. Like when I heard the news, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like when Disney bought Star Wars.
That was for $5
billion. It was, yeah, $4 or $5 billion, but they've got all the toys. They can make theme park rides out of it. That made sense to me. Like they're going to make their money back in short order. Do you know what I mean? Probably have.
I think it took them 5 years, but yeah, they made their money.
Whereas with MGM, it's like, that's a lot of money. I don't know if that was the move.
Is it 8 billion?
Was like 8.47 billion or something. Yeah. I don't know, but they're smarter than me. So, hey, whatever. But moving on, there's a couple bits of news I really wanted to talk about with you two specifically being, huge video game fans as well as film. So I don't know how to say her name and I apologize to her and everyone who knows how in advance, but Last of Us. A star of the game, Merla Dandridge, who played Marlene,
head
of the Fireflies. Mm-hmm. She's actually going to play the same character in the HBO show.
Oh, good.
Which is really funny to me. I don't know if that's ever happened before, like a voice actor getting to play the actual physical actor in an adaptation. But I just thought that was neat, and I didn't know. I know you guys love those games.
It should happen far more often.
I'm racking my brain.
It should happen far more often. I know they're going to be releasing the Uncharted movie relatively soon.
That was my other bit of news. Did you guys see the still frame shot?
Yes.
Of the Uncharted? What did you think?
I hate it. I hate everything about it.
A lot of the huge fans, the Slash Filmcast, of whom I'm a huge fan, they're all huge fans of the game. And they were like, what the fuck? There's no mustache. And I don't know what they're talking about. So I just thought it'd be funny.
They're talking about thought. Mark Wahlberg is Sully.
Yeah.
Is the lack of mustache. I'm not a fan. This looks like what you've come to expect when you think of a video game being adapted into a movie. And that's very sad. When they had said that Tom Holland was going to play a young Drake, I was like, that can be cool. And they found a way to
make it. Well, this movie's been in production so long that Mark Wahlberg was initially supposed to play Drake. Is that correct? Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so much worse.
A truth fact.
God damn it. The Mark Wahlberg casting thing blows my mind because he's no one you should look to play Nathan Drake or definitely Sullivan.
Right.
And the fact that they made zero effort to make him look anything like it, the person he's supposed to. And I get it. They want to movie studios want to make their own thing. And
Well, the Slash Film crew had an interesting point. They're like, this is a stupid idea, or at least a potentially bad one in the sense that you turn Super Mario into a movie or Mortal Kombat. It's like, hey, it'd be interesting if this weird idea was a movie in an entirely separate way. Whereas Uncharted was, in their definition, meant to be from the get-go, hey, what if a video game was like a movie?
Yeah,
like 100%. It already is a movie, basically. And so that's what they were saying. Like, this is a weird, dumb idea. Like, it's already been represented as such.
Bet your life at some point there's going to be a mustache joke, like that he grows one and Tom Holland says
he doesn't even have the hair. He doesn't. He's not. He's just wearing what Mark Wahlberg wore in the fucking Departed. Nothing about that image that they released screamed like, oh, you know, Uncharted going and finding lost tombs and adventuring.
What if he just plays like a guy from Boston trying to help this? Like,
hey, Drake, why don't we take an interest in science? Hey, God, I think that's a Transformer.
Hey. Where'd you park your car?
I'm the guy who does his fucking job.
Departed quote. I got it. I understood that reference. That brings us to our double main event. We're going to start off with A Quiet Place 2 and our re-entry
into
the world of the Bright Wall Dark Room.
Ooh, so spooky. It's so scary. They call it A Quiet Place, but there's a lot of music happening that's really scary.
It wasn't that quiet.
But yeah, A Quiet Place too.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I thought we were muted.
I did too. I'm not going to lie. I hit my vape. I saw the lights and I got scared.
I was trying to cue you guys that we weren't muted by leaning into my microphone
and talking
to you guys in a silly voice.
The thing is that we do that anyway that when we're not recording.
That was too subtle. So here's the big news about this, guys and gals who listen. This was all of our first movie-going experience since the apocalypse, except for the time Andy and I rented an entire theater out at the Alamo Draft House for my bachelor party to watch Mad Max Fury Road.
Which was also dope.
We all delved out into the public, to the AMC theater.
Oh, you're wearing the shirt.
I'm wearing the Alamo shirt. Yay! I only have five shirts. So What did you guys think? And we saw it in IMAX, even though it wasn't filmed in a way that could be fully appreciated visually, but you know, with Dolby sound. I mean, how did it feel to be back in a theater?
I did a little happy dance when the movie was starting. I think Steve noticed it, but I was just like, yes.
I thought it was weird when Steve stood up right before the movie started wearing a Bane mask and said,
you merely adopted the darkness. I was born to it.
I'm like, sit down, Steve. It's
I waited a long time to make this joke. Let me do it now.
Batman villains in movie theaters. Joke didn't age well.
Oh yeah.
You're like, he stood up with the Bane mask. I'm like, where is this going?
No. The popcorn was hot and fresh. The off-brand Raisinets melted into the salty goodness of the corn. And I loved it.
True to form, we get there and we go to our assigned seats and walk past all these wonderful seats, walk up to ours, and in the screening prior to ours, there had been a giant slushy spill.
I think that had been there for months.
I would call it a slushy Armageddon.
It was
genocide of slushies happened right at our seats.
It was basically a welcome mat for us.
The only three seats.
Yep.
Sticky like, floor, like. We had to wash all of our shoes in a puddle outside afterward. We just stomped through it like dumb children.
Guys, look, there's a bigger puddle.
We were literally outside stomping in puddles trying to wash our shoes and people were staring at us. So I had to yell, we haven't been outside in months. So you guys know about the pandemic? We haven't been out since then.
We love puddles.
It was so good. I got my icy. I always get my icy when I go to the movies. Yeah. And then I got some pretzel bites. Oh, I also got... my Pan's Labyrinth tattoo, guys. If you follow me
at
on
the
Twitter,
movie theater,
at, no, well, right before the movie. So I was sitting there, kind of uncomfortable because I had a 5 hour session in the tattoo chair, so I was a little sore. But God, it was such, like I even got kicked like in the back of the head, and I was like, oh, it's good to be back.
No, yeah, we had awful people behind us. Like there was a lady throughout every trailer that just kept going, until like her friend said, stop it. And turned on her phone. I got the light from her phone halfway through the movie. And I had the same thought. Like, this is awesome.
I love the first time in A Quiet Place where it goes to the daughter's perspective. So the sound drops and it's really, really quiet.
Because she's deaf.
Well, the sound drops and the guy behind me just goes, oh, because she can't hear. And I just laughed.
I think that this movie, especially though, and I leaned over to one of you guys and I said it, and I was like, I forgot how not snack friendly the first one was, because there is a lot of sound design in this movie where it's complete silence. And so you had just grabbed a handful of popcorn and it's like, put a piece in your mouth and you're like trying to let your saliva dissolve it rather than chew.
Which is the way I like to eat it sometimes. So that's fair. But only if you care about other people, Andy.
But everybody in the, and it was not like a packed theater, but.
This is turning into ASMR.
It wasn't a packed theater, but it was pretty full, right?
No, there was like 22 people in there and it's like a 100-seat auditorium.
The most people I've seen in a movie theater in a very long time.
It's the only movie theater you've been in a very long time.
I don't know. There were people there.
There's a fair amount of people in there. There was not.
But point being, everybody was very respectful during those super quiet scenes. Yes. Like there wasn't like
all dozen of them
rattling bags or anything. Yeah. There's just fewer every time.
This is one of those movies that when it goes silent, people, you know, are paying attention more. Mm-hmm. So
well, I think the movie, well, we'll talk about general thoughts here in a moment, but I think it's slated to take in around 54 million domestic over the weekend.
Nice.
Which is more than the entire run of Tenet. Fuck for you, reference. Tenet. Right. Yeah. Andy's top 10 of the year. Number 10. He saw 11 movies that year. Give him a break.
Oh, yeah. So I guess that wasn't my first movie going experience. I saw Tenet.
Oh, yeah.
It's been almost a year, though, because that was June.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's been almost a year since
Andy braved the darkness for Tenet.
We both did. I was there with him.
Oh, my goodness, Steve.
Yeah. Remember, I was petrified by the levee at the time because we got into the movie theater in Tenet. Everything was golden. Everyone had the rules and following everything and being safe. You step out that movie theater onto the levee and people can't even be bothered to wear a mask, let alone a shirt. So, yeah, scary times.
It's always been a weird place, but I really enjoyed myself. So what we're going to do, we're going to do general thoughts overall on what we felt about A Quiet Place 2 for people that haven't seen the film, because we know it just came out and it's actually not available to stream despite our title streaming thing. So we apologize for that. But as of right now, you have to brave a theater to see A Quiet Place 2. After that, we'll have a spoiler bumper and then we'll talk about some spoilers on A Quiet Place 2. So let's start with some general thoughts. Andy, what did you think of A Quiet Place 2?
I absolutely loved it. I think that it was as good, if not maybe better, than the original.
Wow.
Now, the original had a big thing going for it in that it was just super unique. You know, when it came out, like, oh my God, the idea of having to be super duper quiet during a horror movie, or like during the horror experience or whatever, which, I mean, you're always super duper quiet because you don't want the killer to find you or whatever.
Right.
But when that's like the main conceit, is like that it had that going for it, was like the new thing, kind of like Bird Box on Netflix. You know what I mean? Oh, you can't look at anything.
Bird Box Bandersnatch.
But I think that it was, they used the conceit even more effectively than they did in the first film. I think that all around the acting was phenomenal. Bringing in Cillian Murphy was a excellent choice. It's, if you had asked me who was going to be cast in A Quiet Place Part 2, I would not have thought Cillian Murphy, but he did so well in it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is like, he's just so recognizable even with a mask on. But
it's the hair, man. It's the hair.
I loved the way the movie was filmed. It felt like a throwback to like.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I don't know, like, did you guys see Super 8? J.J. Abrams movie. The way it was filmed reminded me a little bit of that. It had like sort of that Spielberg flair to it. Steve, you mentioned when we stepped out of the film that it like was storyboarded to death. And I mm-hmm. agree with that assessment. It was
in a good way.
Every transition was meticulously thought out and the plotting of it was just so sharp. And the sound design was absolutely wonderful. They used silence to great effect. There was a lot of daylight horror in it, and I love that so much. And yeah, I loved it.
Steve, what are your overall thoughts on A Quiet Place 2?
I really liked it. I'm not gonna go and I don't think it's as good as the first one, but it's still very good. I think the first one has a lot more on this one in terms of the conceit is very original. It's the first one. So that's the first one you see. So it means more, but also I think the first one also does a lot of things that are more surprising and the stakes feel a little higher in the first one, with some of the surprises they do. And, you know, I might speak more to that when we get into spoilers, cause I don't really want to spoil A Quiet Place 1 either. I'm
sure.
Not too
I know what you mean.
Comfortable with that. But I mean, overall it's a very great movie. I love how, you know, as Andy alluded to, it's storyboarded really well where all the shots, there's typically two planes of action happening concurrently on screen. And so they cut back and forth between these characters who are in completely different situations.
At one point, there was three.
Yeah, there was.
The cross-cutting was great.
So much tension.
And the way that they go in between those several scenes that are happening at the same time is genius. Like the camera just flows perfectly between them. The acting's great. I really liked how, I mean, and the first one was like this too, but this one is just as great in this regard, and that it isn't afraid to just sit on things where a lesser movie would be like, oh, the audience might get bored if we're staring at this too long. Ah, cut to something else. This movie, like the first one, will just sit and look at something in silence. There's like nothing happening. Everyone's being very quiet. Like, I can't tell you, like there's a scene where all the characters are just walking and it pays so much attention to how they're walking, like on the path, as to not, you know, make sound. And the movie just really makes that, even the fact of them walking in broad daylight, not really in any immediate danger, but that just that simple action is very interesting as a viewer. You're just kind of captivated by like, oh my gosh, don't step on that leaf. It'll make a crinkle noise. Don't do that. So yeah, I really, really like it. Definitely go see it. I look forward to kind of getting into spoilers here in a few minutes. But Chris, overall, your thoughts?
Yeah, I want to cut pretty quickly to spoilers, and then we got to go pretty quickly in general just to get to Cruella as well. But so I'll just say very briefly, I really enjoyed the film. I'm closer to Steve's assessment. I think it's almost as good as the first one, but I think that that's almost unfair to say because, as you said, you know, the conceit being more original when you see it the first one for the first time, it's kind of hard to compete with that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I had a, and also it's a little bit colored by the fact that it was my first time back at a theater with my friends. And so I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. It could have been Godzilla versus Kong. And I probably would have had a phenomenal time, even though I hated that movie. just because it's a giant screen with Dolby sound and shitty popcorn, yeah. My favorite, you know, sticky floors. I miss this.
Yes.
But I think it's amazing to me how good of a director John Krasinski is. And it's one of the tightest scripts. I mean, I have so much to say about how well the screenplay was written. And I know he had two co-writers helping him with that.
Toit scripts, baby.
So toit. Like, I'm toyer to seeing scripts that aren't toit.
Toit scripts.
Conor McGregor called in earlier and told us his thoughts on the script. And it was very aggressive.
What about the toit scripts?
it was aggressive. And I think that's
fuck you.
That's the one thing that it was missing was a lot more of John Krasinski. And a lot of the heart that he brought to the first film. But we'll talk about more about that in spoilers probably. So let's go ahead and move in. I got some stuff to say. Spoilers for Quiet Place 2 starting now. Thanks, Frank.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
So when you were talking about the walking, when Steve, you're talking about the effort that they put into watching the walk, stuff like that. One thing that amazes me about these films is how smart the script is, not just the tightness of it and all the stuff we can talk about, the cross cutting and the building of tension and that kind of stuff, but just how they really thought about what it would be like if this. So if you don't know and you're in spoiler territory, first, shame on you, but also shame on double shame because you haven't seen A Quiet Place One. But it's about
go see it.
This group of monsters that have just hypersensitive hearing and they're blind. And so they'll come out of nowhere and kill anything that makes any noise whatsoever. And so the people that have survived this attack now live in a noiseless world, right? And one of the neat conceits is that this particular family that they follow, the daughter is deaf. And so they all know sign language, so they're able to operate without talking to one another. But also it's an extra horror element when it's the young girl's perspective because mm-hmm. she can't hear if she's making any noise or not. So she's actually at a disadvantage. Anyhoozle. So like when they're walking along that path, for instance, it seemed to me that they had taken the time to like pour sand or rice to make mm-hmm. less noise across their most trodden territory and how they don't wear shoes so they don't make noise. And A Quiet Place One is how fucking smart these people are about making these films. When they go through an extended scene where they're walking through like a grocery store in the opening scene of A Quiet Place One, where eventually the little boy meets his end. If you notice, they're going on like a scavenger hunt, not a scavenger hunt, like a playing a game. They're going on like a, what's it called? A run to collect supplies. There's a name for that.
A supply run?
Yes. Yes. They are. There's scavenging. There's another word for that. Whatever.
Looting.
But if you go, if you go through.
Which news channel is this?
The camera pans across the shelves and all of the shelves are empty because, you know, the city, whoever has been surviving in the city has been alive for 400 and something days now, right? So obviously they've gone through the tiny general store supplies, except for one aisle that is still stocked full of potato chips.
Yeah.
Because potato chips are really fucking noisy. You wouldn't want to open the bag. And it's like, that's so clever. Like, it just pans across real quick. And like, all the potato chips are still there. Nobody's grabbing them still. It's like, that's awesome. You know, the little shit like that just really impresses me about this film. Because it would be so easy to make a story like this schlocky. And even though it's filled with crazy monsters and outlandish things, it seems, for the most part, except for a few nits I could pick, extremely realistic. You know, there's nothing more frustrating in a horror film where a character does something just really fucking stupid that's against what you think that character would do just to serve the plot or to put them in a situation to make it scary. And it's not scary because you're too busy thinking, why would they do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think any of the characters in these Quiet Place movies do anything that is either A, really smart, or A, isn't really smart, or B, at least understandable given the circumstances or emotional state that they're in. Mm-hmm. So that's super impressive. Andy, spoiler talk. What do you want us to lay down?
So you mentioned the lack of heart with the lack of John Krasinski. And I kind of agree with you there. He is also not quite on the same level as like Keanu Reeves or Seth Rogen, but he's up there. You know what I mean?
It's Jim.
It's Jim, right?
You don't want to see Jim in trouble?
You just want to hug him.
Yeah, he gave his life to save his children.
I don't want to undercut what you're about to say, but I also want to be clear. Like, I don't think that the sequel is missing heart. I think Cillian Murphy is one of my favorite fucking actors of all time. He's brilliant. And the actual emotional journey that he takes in this film is probably greater than the first film.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything about him. I think that he was actually underserved, and I was going to talk about the daughter played by Millicent Simmons, Evelyn. She's kind of the heart of this movie. And I think that she absolutely fucking crushed it. And so what I really loved about this movie was her dynamic with, is it Cillian or Cillian? I never know.
I think it's Cillian.
Cillian Murphy. That we basically got to watch The Last of Us Part 1.5 for parts of this movie. And that was so cool. It was a really effective dynamic between the two of them. And I guess, yeah, part of it was Cillian Murphy's like ultimate decision to be like, well, first off, like have to make the turn of like, I guess I'm going to help this family, to not only am I going to go get this girl, but I'm going to actually try to help her to complete her mission.
Right.
Kind of see something in his old friend. I would have liked to have gotten to have spent a little more time in the flashback to better establish the dynamic between his family and theirs. And so I feel like he was potentially underserved in that regard. I think that the movie struggles a little bit with leaning heavily on you need to have seen part one and be pretty familiar with it.
Yeah.
Like there's a shot early on when they're doing the panning across the grocery store and they pan across the spaceship toys. And those
you remember the little boy.
Those of us who have seen part one recognize the you know, importance of that. But, and I mean, that's not necessarily a point to detract from it, but like the whole conceit of the film where Evelyn decides that she wants to figure out where the radio station is and take her cochlear implant there that her dad figured out can stun these monsters. None of that is really like told in the first act of this movie. Like, oh, by the way, do you remember this is how they survived the climax of the last film? You kind of just have to run with it. And so that was a little silly, but I have seen the first one pretty recently. And so I was okay with it, but I think that it struggled there. I feel like I'm pointing out negatives of it, but when I think I liked it more than you guys. I fucking love this movie.
That's just your style, man. That's how Tenet made it in your top 10.
I agree with you.
I think
you.
It's a little, I don't understand what you're saying all the way though. Like, of course you have to have seen the first one to watch the sequel. And of course you can lean heavily on fans.
I kind of agree with Andy in that regard. Cause I was thinking if I had not seen A Quiet Place 1 and like my friend dragged me to see A Quiet Place 2, just the way the movie opens is kind of confusing because it opens with day one. And you know, my biggest complaint about the movie is that it opens with day one when the aliens first start attacking their small town and like the hell that unleashes where they live. And then it jumps forward in time to immediately like the last shot of the first movie where Emily Blunt and the kids are leaving the house. And I think that transition is pretty clunky. Like it's very odd. That was my one complaint about the movie, is just that transition from the past to present is very weird. But if I had not seen the first movie at all, that opening scene makes a big deal about John Krasinski being the dad. And then they like don't talk about him. And so as a new viewer, I might be like, well, where's John Krasinski? What happened to him? And because they don't ever show you that he died. Mm-hmm. I mean, they definitely talk about it. Like, I think there's a scene with Emily Blunt and Cillian Murphy where she's like, he's gone. Lee's gone. But I don't know if a new viewer might just be confused in the first part. Mm-hmm. It's something they can definitely get over. But I kind of see where you're saying.
Well, I think that's the distinction between, like, because some sequels can sort of stand on their own when they're episodic. Mm-hmm. But I think that they were, I would just give them a little more credit than they maybe even deserve. But that's why they chose to call it part two.
Yeah, I have the
same thought. It's not two, it's part two. It's the other half of this story. Mm-hmm. So, and I actually thought that opening scene, the cold opening with when it went to basically a prequel, which a whole prequel film would be really interesting based on the opening. Like, it just ramps to 100 immediately after the baseball scene. But why I think the script is so fucking genius, because, you know, I've written scripts and I can see the underlining like idea that they had to solve, like the problem they had to solve. How do we introduce all these other characters that have just been here the whole time? We didn't talk about it at all. So, okay, let's bring John back, or he's writing and directing. He's like, let's bring me back. Right. Obvi. We can show how this started and we can introduce Cillian Murphy's character, right? Mm-hmm. Just in a really clever way, sitting in this baseball stadium as a friend of our families, and we can show him with his kid very subtly and let you know that that's going to be a thing later.
Teaches the sign language of diving.
The dive sign language. I mean, it's Chekhov wall to wall. It's all reused. The economy is very solid.
Yeah. They introduced that the boy has to learn to calm his nerves. He has
anxiety issues. Yeah. Right. And you're not very good at baseball. So maybe we should, I'm just kidding. I'm not either. So I don't know. I just
had a good eye. He took that first ball.
Yeah. He was like, I'm not going to swing. I don't think he was going to, though. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Till the end. He swings at the end with that pistol, baby.
Yeah, he does.
I don't know. I just thought,
oh, dude, they should have had him hit something with a bat at the end.
And maybe that would have been too much. So, and they know when to pull back, too. You know what I mean?
It would have been too much like Signs.
I think the biggest plot hole for me, not that the fact that the cochlear implant was used at all. Obviously, that's the linchpin. That's the secret kryptonite to these monsters that are, I forgot they were.
Oh, I didn't think that was a plot.
I forgot they were armored, by the way. So right. I'm like, in the opening sequence, I'm like, shoot them, you know? And then the cop can't kill it. I'm like, oh shit, that's really unfair. Yeah. They're armored. That's right. Like Krasinski's stupid writing in the basement, armor ?
That was one thing I wondered about.
Her plan, though, is to take it to this radio station, right? And then blare it to what? Kill all the monsters so everywhere around the world they can fight them now?
To stun them, yeah.
Who the fuck is blaring the music that was heretofore playing where the monsters could hear? How does this help anyone? And say they're using headphones, you know, just going beyond the sea because they're bored, right? Who hears that excruciating, piercing noise and thinks, oh, I bet this will hurt the monsters? It's a terrible idea. It's going to help zero people.
Well, I think that'll lead to a part three where now the family is traveling. Just
around unplugging headphones.
Yeah, I took it as like the start of the resistance.
So they leave that hanging in the sound booth, right? Mm-hmm. So that channel's always blaring that.
Yep.
And just travel to.
Yeah. And like they bring their little jukebox where they have with them their amp. And
they won't have the cochlear implant though. They'll have to have the radio.
Well, yeah.
Carry a radio.
But that's
hey, turn it to 102.7.
Yeah. But that's what the brother had.
Has that got some jams on there?
Radio amp.
Yeah.
And they're just going to travel around, blast some aliens. Emily Blunt's going to look like a total boss, shotgunning people in the face. And and they're going to be like, wow. And then the word will spread. And then slowly but surely, that is how the world kind of takes back.
And then when they rebuild society, Millicent Simmons' character is going to be a DJ, which is what she's always dreamed of.
Yeah, what's up? This is MC Donald dropping these sick beats.
Here's another song I've never heard before.
Oh, no.
You mentioned before,
Chris. Oh, no.
You mentioned before that the characters at not acting in ways that upsets you.
Did somebody do something?
No. Well, the son, a tiny bit, like climbing out to go look for mom.
That's the only thing that pissed me off.
When his little brother is
for down sure. there. He caused all that shit.
So that a tiny bit, but
I'm going to leave the baby.
because it was a child doing this, I was kind of okay with it. But no, I was actually going to say the opposite, that I really liked people acting not just in the way you want them to, but almost smarter than you. Like, when in the flashback sequence in the opening, when John Krasinski first sees the first alien go slamming into the cop car in front of him, he immediately turns and books it. And like, it's shot so well, like, immediately starts tracking backwards and he's fucking sprinting back to the car because, like, first thought in his head was go save my daughter. It wasn't like, what the fuck is that thing? Right. Let's linger on the monster and
try to save the cop because I'm a hero. Right. None of that.
It was like, I'm out. Like,
nope. Bye.
and especially in that opening, like,
that scared sequence. The shit out of me. Jump scares don't get me a lot, but this, they're very good. Like, all of them get me in this movie.
The way the flashback sequence was shot, like, all of it was really good. Just like the tracking shot when he's like walking down the street and waving into the store window and then like turns and walks down the alleyway to get into where the baseball field is. They reuse that exact same shot going the opposite way. Like, hey, there's a fucking comet. Like, guys, let's bail. And like, it pulls back and goes the opposite way and stuff. And sorry, I was leaning away from the camera or microphone. But I thought that the cinematography was absolutely fucking gorgeous. And I really, really liked the way they shot the dock sequence. It was so creepy. And like the little girl, like, scampering around, almost like a feral human or whatever.
Yeah, we joked about this at the outside the theater. You know, I mentioned like it's like day 442 or whatever. Like, it's only been a year and a half, and these people have devolved already. It's almost like the main characters are like, "Hey, what's up, Jim? You know, like, why are you looking all weird?"
I made the joke that those were Bayou people. They were already like,
your eyes are super red, dude. Like, what's wrong with you?
They don't know anything's amiss with society. They're just used to robbing people on the docks.
Also, listener, please write in and tell me if the woman that gets slammed into the boat by the monster during that scene is the little girl. Because that makes the scene so much better.
Dude, oh my God, I went nice like when that happened. Because God, like the sound effect on that was awesome. Like the that Bayou fan. Family or whatever, that was some of the most menacing, like, no dialogue sequence ever, where a dude's just like, so they tie a rope around Killian Murphy that's got a bunch of, like,
you bottles know,
bottles and things that's gonna make noise,
jingle jangles,
and he just has to sit there while they like start to strip down Reagan. I call her Evelyn before, her name's Reagan. And it's like, oh my fucking God. And dude's just like all creepy, all red-eyed, long hair. He almost looked like the dude from fucking House of a Thousand Corpses. Just like looking over at dude, like, you can't do shit about this, bro. That was the total
that
vibe.
That was said in his eyes.
Yeah. I mean, it's every one of those words.
It was, God, it was shot so well.
Yeah, and the blocking of how they get out of that mess is really clever, too. Mm-hmm.
Everything about it, so clever. I loved it. Even the things that I did see coming, it was like, when it did happen, it was in a satisfying way. Emily Blunt absolutely destroys it. You can, like, as the matriarch, you know, I would die immediately scenes. In that situation, and it's wonderful to see her just overcome everything.
She has one of my favorite scenes where she's coming back into the factory and she basically has to fight one of these creatures on her own. And like, I was telling you guys outside the theater, it basically is Emily Blunt slowly walking around a giant monster and then, you know, setting it on fire, you know, making the sprinkler system go off. But like, in the blocking of that scene, it's just her slowly walking around it. And but even though there's not a lot of stuff happening, it's so intense. And it's, you're terrifying, just on the edge of your seat watching as and like you say, Andy, like, it's the monster's in plain view. It's right there. Mm-hmm. They're not using the standard Jaws trick where you don't see the monster, especially in that scene. And it's just so good. They do a lot of great, you know, stuff. There's an extended sequence. You know, what is that thing that they keep going into? Like a furnace? Is that what that is?
I don't know.
I think so.
I think you're right.
It's some type of chamber. I think it's a furnace, but they can go into it, but they can't stay in it long because they lose air. And obviously the first time they hop into it and you realize that's going to happen, you're like, oh, okay, they're going to have a situation where they get locked in and they're running out of air. And yeah, that happens. But even though you see it coming, it's still so scary.
They actually do terrible things to a baby, and like, not in reality, but the fact that it could very quickly be terrible for the baby.
Yeah.
Like there's a part where the monster like yanks the baby's little manger out of the vault.
And you're for like, hot second, I thought the baby was in that.
Yeah. And then like, it's got this little, I don't know. Like I was in the hospital with my mom for many, many years. When you see a loved one on oxygen, it's very, it does something to your brain. It's very tough to see. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't like every time they put the little oxygen mask on the baby, I'm like, ah, like I just, it was very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I can't deny how effective that was to watch like the tension with like these ill-equipped, you know, soft human bodies and then wielding a baby running from these long-armed scavenger monsters. It's like, oh my God, stop doing this to me. But yeah, edge of my seat thriller for sure.
So we all loved it.
I think so.
Very much so.
That about wraps up our review of A Quiet Place 2. Does anybody else have any thoughts before we move on to Cruella?
Just can't wait for part 3.
I know. And I'm actually going to watch, of the two movies we're talking about, I'm certainly going to watch A Quiet Place 2 many abruptly, more times.
And they gave so much room for 3.
Yeah.
I'm so mm-hmm. happy.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. It does have an abrupt end, so be prepared for that.
That just means you wanted more. They did well.
Yeah.
That brings us to our review of Cruella, darling. This time I'm aware we're not muted. Because I learn things.
We got some Iggy Pop playing though, which is such a great song.
So how long this intro was.
Yeah. There it is. Here comes the guitar.
There it is. Iggy Pop!
I mean, technically it's a cover, but
still.
So Cruella.
Well, all right, I'm really curious to know what you guys think, because we didn't, unlike A Quiet Place 2, we haven't talked about it. We literally just finished watching this movie, so I don't really know how you guys felt about it. I think I know, because I got some reactions from Steve emotionally reacting in the moment that I kind of think I interpreted correctly. But we're going to try to do this as quickly as possible. We're sure our listeners at home are getting antsy. We're going to do the same thing. Overall, spoiler-free review if you haven't seen it yet. We rented it for $30, the premiere access on Disney Plus. And then we're going to have a spoiler-filled quick discussion after that. So let's delve into our general thoughts. Andy, what did you think of Cruella?
Dude, I actually super liked it. It was not at all the movie that I was expecting. I knew that it was kind of going to be the Devil Wears Puppy vibe.
and, they should have called it that.
Right. They super lean into that. And it's like almost like this combo, like Devil Wears Prada with combo heist movie thing. Like it's crazy. It's very funny at times. I think I enjoyed it a lot more because I watched it with you guys than I would have if I had just sat here and watched it on my own.
Oh, thanks, man.
I think I really enjoy communal film experiences, but particularly if like a movie's not quite your bag, baby, that doing it with friends can make the difference.
So many awesome Powers references this episode.
But I actually really enjoyed it. I thought that Emma Thompson fucking killed it. Like she was so good.
Terrifying.
Von Helman or something?
Baroness Von Helman.
Baroness Von Helmet. She was absolutely phenomenal. Emma Stone.
Von Helmet.
Sounds like Spaceballs.
Yeah.
I bet she gives great help.
I thought that Emma Stone was also excellent. There were times where I could see her acting, but then eventually, like as the movie went on, I think that the genius of it is that I was kind of supposed to see her acting and then really actually see the transformation over time. And that made me enjoy it all the more. I thought that plot wise, it was pretty fucking silly at times, but like there was one point where I almost made a joke about what absolutely should not have happened. And then it did. And I was like, why? But I mean, it's a fucking origin story for a Disney villain, so like what could I have expected, you know? But I mean I had fun with it.
Steve, what were your overall thoughts on Cruella?
Well, if people who have known me for a long time know that I am vehemently against Disney taking animated films and making live action versions of them, I do not like them. For Steve, I am. It is not a genre that I like. I hate them. That being said, I like this movie.
Good.
Yeah, I really liked it. I was actually kind of looking forward to it because just the trailers they released, there was a style to this movie that was lacking in a lot of these others, live action presentation. I know this isn't a remake, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, I didn't like the style of most of those movies, but this one felt lived in, but also cutting edge, and it just had a good flair to it. And of course, I like Emma Stone and Emma Thompson, and seeing the two of them on the screen was great. Both of them are phenomenal. I would not be surprised if at least one of them would get nominated for some type of acting award, because I think they're great in it. More Emma Thompson, but Emma Stone's there's one scene in particular that I think Emma Stone's really, really great in. I don't think the movie needs to be as long as it is. Mm-hmm. There are some aspects of it that feel like it should be in a completely different movie than this. Specifically, I think Horace's character, he's played for comedy, but some of his comedy does not fit with the world that they've built. You know, some of the comedy is, it could be funny where it's like almost sinister. Some of her lines about like killing dogs potentially, is funny in a dark way, but then you have Horace in the other room going, "I fell in a cake," which seems that like it should be in a different movie.
I was getting strong Nick Frost vibes from him.
Mm. Oh, really?
And liking it.
I got like a British Josh Gad.
Yeah, I was getting more of that.
I guess I should say Nick Frost would have killed that role.
He definitely would have. There was a plot thing that happened 3/4 of the way into the movie that I'm not super thrilled about, that I thought was, oh, like, this is dumb. But like you said, Andy, it's a Disney villain revisionist history, as you will.
Right.
But overall, yeah, this was really good. Like, I definitely suggest, even if you're kind of on the fence this movie, go see it.
Did either of you see enjoyable. Maleficent or I the did. Subsequent sequel? Those movies getting any good?
The first Maleficent is okay. The second one is terrible.
Okay.
And I cannot hear that word without seeing, what's the actor's name from, he was in the, anyway, the bad guy.
Woody Harrelson.
No, the bad guy in Maleficent, and like the way he says it with his thick accent, it's like Maleficent.
Oh,
he,
no.
Like, vomits the word every time he says it. It's the guy. Oh, it's the guy from whatever. Anyway. Yeah, those movies aren't that great, but this one
is. If you say the guy from without giving me a reference point one more time.
Charlton Copley, yes. That's
the dude from District 9.
District 9, yeah. I couldn't think of District 9. I kept wanting to say Super 8, and in my head, I'm like, no, that's not it.
Hey, but it's just talking about that earlier.
It's something with a letter or number. Something with a number.
Something with a letter. Okay, easy A.
Yeah.
Chris?
There was one thing that really upset me plot-wise throughout, but they eventually fixed it. Overall, I had a great time watching Cruella. Like you guys, I think it was very stylized and fun. Absolutely adore Emma Stone. I think she killed it. Every bit as much as, you know, you can give her the Joaquin Phoenix Joker Award next year. Absolutely. The costume design, obviously, fantastic.
Soundtrack was,
I'm not a fashionista, but there were some of those outfits where I was like, oh, damn.
I meant to do the entire review in my
darling
voice, but I failed. So I'll just go hither and thither with it. I think I wrote something down early on, and I think it's like if Charles Dickens fucked Guy Ritchie and they had a baby, and that baby wrote
Charles Dickens fucked that baby.
No. And then that baby wrote Joker. It would be this movie.
Who was heavily influenced by Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah. So this, like, it's got this like Dickensian, like, orphan family run around stealing in London vibe that I really had a great time with, and didn't expect at all. But anyway,
that's what I love about movies like this. Cause they're like, how can we make a movie about a bunch of thieves sympathetic? Well, make them orphans and give them British accents and people will love them.
So, get Hisdar Zo Lorak from Game of Thrones.
I mean, one of the guys' lines before they do any heist is like, well, let's ruin someone's day. And it's like, right. These are the heroes.
I think a lot of people were worried that this character, Cruella de Vil, was completely
irredeemable.
Irredeemable is the word. Thank you so much. I was going to go ahead and stutter for a good minute. Completely irredeemable. I think it has the opposite problem. I think that they made Cruella very sympathetic, but in such a way that it did not earn her later turn to Cruella. Like, whatever happens after this movie doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't want to spoil too much, but like, I think she's actually extremely likable, and knowing what she later becomes is kind of like, those two people still seem like different people.
Don't remember enough of 101 Dalmatians to.
I think you do. You remember one very important thing, which is all you need to know.
What did Cruella de Vil want to do with those 101 Dalmatians?
What kind of person could kill literally 101 puppies and be okay?
What did Glenn Close want to do with those puppies, Andy?
But that being said, let's go ahead and, because I almost ruined it for us, let's move into spoiler territory starting now.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
She wanted to make the dog's coats, Andy.
So here's what I know. We didn't want to spoil 101 Dalmatians either. It's so goofy. So I think that, you know, at the end of this film, Cruella is still very likable. They succeed. She's got the mansion now. It's very Knives Out-y. She's got the cup. She's standing on the balcony. Woohoo! All her friends are there that I thought she was going to alienate, which was the plot point that I hated. Mm-hmm. I didn't, like, halfway through the movie, she's just being, like, really mean to Jasper and Horace for no reason whatsoever. Like, I understand that she's having this psychotic turn and she's mad at the world, but there is absolutely no stimulus for her to be so terrible to the only people she's ever known. And it was completely unbelievable to me. Fetch my coat, roach, you know, and it's like,
imbecile.
What? Why would she wouldn't do that?
Why are you talking like
that? Yeah, she changed her accent to the lady that she idolizes that she found out killed her mom, whatever, right?
I feel like that turn should have happened after the fire. It could have been like a reborn in Fire Phoenix kind of thing.
Sure.
Like, okay, you fucking did this.
Yeah, there was like
now
two distinct turns. But after the fire, she actually like, now I'm just going to go mad.
Right.
And then went, I'm sorry, Jasper. I don't know why I've been talking like this. You know, and she went completely reverted. And right. It's like, oh, that's not what I expected.
So mad.
That's not what I expected at all. But I loved, and I heard a lot of people saying, there's more needle drops in this movie than a James Gunn film. And yeah. I heard a lot of people making fun of that. Like, it's just repeated to where it loses effect. I disagree. I mean, I get it, but I think it was fun every time. I'm like, holy shit, the doors. All right. You know,
the music choices were on point. That helped. I think.
I thought the music was great.
I know a lot of people compared this to the first Suicide Squad movie, which also had a bunch of music choices. But, you know, that movie had very poor, you know, like they were just like, find popular movies that we can throw their music that we can throw into. Whereas this one, I feel like all the soundtrack, you know, landed, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
100%.
They were classic choices.
I guess 90%.
And it's very punky. Like, I think the whole point, since it takes place in the 60s and 70s, is to be that she's, you know, she's the Sex Pistols or whatever to whatever that the Baroness is. So it's very punky, like that where she has the future written in black paint across her eye.
Yeah. I'm trying.
What? You speak Motown? It's so wholesome.
I was looking for wholesome.
When she has the future written in black paint over her face, like it's awesome.
That was dope.
She's very regal, very punky. I thought it was awesome. Over the top. Even I know you hated the parachute at the end.
Yes, that was a thing that I almost made a joke about. Like, I bet it's a fucking parachute, and that's how she survived. And then it was. And then there's like something about, ladies, remember this kind of skirt's a lifesaver. Yeah. And I'm like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
But I think if you made it through the prison break and, you know, they repeatedly hijack garbage trucks to dumpster. What are we going to do with this dumpster now? I've got it.
I'm going to make a dress out of trash. And I'm going to come out
literally did.
So amazing.
Like, it's there's so many goofball things. Like,
I wanted that dress to get caught on something when they're driving.
That shot where she's laughing maniacally.
There were all these newspaper clippings like, police still have no leads. And I'm like, she was literally standing in the middle of the most popular gala in London in a garbage truck, like for multiple minutes, posing for photos.
And the same fat guy keeps walking into every scene of the crime.
We've got no leads.
he waddles up next to no leads, eh?
Why did he waddle, Andy? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We're being very, very, very not 2021 in this episode.
I used to be fat. I'm allowed.
That's true. Same. I don't know. I had a great time with this. There was one thing I want to note. So toward like the second act, the end of the second act into the third, when she's starting to kind of reveal herself to the Baroness. At one point the Baroness says, you know, I don't remember how she phrased it, but she said, don't say thank you. That's what losers do, or something like that. Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
And so Emma Stone's character, Cruella, keeps saying thank you, supposedly accidentally, but it reminded me of something my dad said. I was having a tough day at work and I was in my early teens. And I was like KFC or something. And my dad was like, hey, well, don't, you know, overtly be rude to your boss, but I understand what kind of person he is from what you're telling me. What I do sometimes is I say thank you or yes, sir, or right away in a way where I really mean fuck you. And it's very satisfying. And so they'll actually think that I'm extremely contrite because I say it so often and it feels good knowing what I really mean. And that's what I felt like Cruella was doing when she, every time she said thank you, it was
God, your dad and mine gave such different advice. Good God. My dad's advice was literally like, Andy, you just have to kiss ass. make them love you. You're just there for money.
It's the same advice, but just mine felt satisfying. But yeah,
mine was soul crushing.
Well, your dad was successful. And mine died penniless and alone. But he took shit from no man.
Oh God.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, follow in his footsteps. We have to talk about if you made it through the fact that Dalmatians knocked her mother off a cliff and that's why she hates Dalmatians.
Yeah, that was the other room.
You couldn't possibly get pissed at the parachute.
Going into this movie, I thought like, man, it's going to be so funny. Whatever way they decide to like make her hate dogs, it's going to be so great.
They're like the Bruce Wayne origin story, only it's Dalmatians.
Yeah. The Dalmatians comically knock her mother off a cliff.
Off a cliff.
Damn funny. Like, I know that was supposed to be a sad moment, but I thought that was fucking hilarious.
No, for sure. It definitely wasn't sad. It was insane that they made that choice. And she doesn't actually hate dogs. She's very close with dogs. She's a very good trainer of dogs.
She has a dog named Buddy.
And that's what I mean about later on. You're like, I can't believe that this woman would become that woman. They did a terrible job in painting that picture.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I think this movie would be better if they had just made the movie they wanted to make instead of trying to adapt it to a Disney property.
I agree.
It very much feels like
just
like,
a Devil Wears Prada, like weird thing. It would be a wonderful movie.
It feels like they were like, oh, this is a great script, but we can't make a ton of money off of it. Let's make it a Disney villain origin story and make
I do agree. Like the little nods, the name is awesome. Like if we could just take a time machine, I've got a better, easier idea, Steve. We build a time machine.
I'm in.
We go back.
Okay.
We just
stop Hitler.
No.
Oh, well, we've done this twice before.
You don't want to, you know, butterfly wings. We don't know what that'll affect. But we can stop 101 Dalmatians from being made and the book from being written. And we do that. And this movie is a fresh, you know, spec script. And it's a wonderful film. See what I'm saying?
Because the worst parts of the movie are the shoehorned.
The stinger wouldn't make sense. That's true. Pongo and Perdita.
Yeah, the worst parts of this movie are the shoehorned in 101 Dalmatians references that don't really make sense in this movie, but they're like, yes, Anita Darling is a character. And I forget the husband's name. The husband's a
the lawyer guy.
The lawyer guy.
Name was Dearly, but am I wrong about that?
They wouldn't make that mistake.
Well, Andy, they were calling her Darling in that. And I kept being like, her name's Anita, but I didn't think it was
Darling. It's Anita Darling. Cause at one point she goes, Anita Darling, darling.
Yeah.
Is clever.
And then, the post-credit scene is, Cruella gifting the titular Dalmatians Pongo,
which made it seem to me like we all know how long dogs live. That means that sometime in the next 15 or so years is when she does the events of 101 Dalmatians. And it's like, well, that's too quick of a turn.
Right. Well, in this film, time works differently because the beginning of the movie, she is what, like 8, and then 10 years go by and her 8-year-old friends become 40-year-old men.
Right.
Yes. And their dogs are also still alive, which as an owner of a dog, that would be great. But probably unrealistic. Not the case. Which, by the way, I can't believe we've gone this far without talking about the greatest character in the movie, and that is the dog Wink.
Yes.
Who is my hero, and I want him.
The dogs were awesome.
And I love the fact that they dressed him up as a rat, and there's like an extended sequence where this dog's running around and he's like, oh, blimey, that's a huge rat! Get away! And he's like pretending to spray it, and then at the end when they break him out of jail.
He does it. He sprays the shit out of it, knocks it out, and puts it in his bag and goes, sorry, I didn't
mean it. Lifts it up by the tail, so it looks like a rat. And then when he breaks him out of prison and he's like, I'm gonna kiss you on the mouth and I don't care where it's been.
Yeah.
I say that to my dog. Like 100%. I said that to Pippin.
I say that to my wife.
I'm going to kiss you on the mouth. I don't care.
In a British accent.
And she's like, get away from me.
I just want to talk about how good at physical comedy Emma Stone is. And that was the shining point in this movie for me, aside from, you know, just the stylization of it. Like there's so many little scenes. One only example I can think of off the top of my head is she's going to hand her sketchbook to the Baroness, and her, the Baroness hand is out and cocked in a strange way. And Emma Stone just kind of like tries to slide it in exactly how her hand is positioned. And it, and it's so split second, not a, they don't make a huge thing of it. There's just thousands of tiny moments like that, that it's such a good little chuckle. It's cute. It's awesome. And I think she's so strong at that, like not making a big deal out of it. I never really noticed before how good at physical comedy she is.
She's wonderful in this movie, top to bottom.
Yep.
I think soup to nuts. She's great at this.
Soup to nuts, as we always say. We have no idea what that means. Are there any other spoiler comments you guys want to talk about with Cruella?
Andy, you look like you're in deep thought.
He's really considering. That's what I love about Andy. He's not going to leave any question unexplored.
No, he's got thoughts.
He's going to give an honest answer.
No is the honest answer.
Sure. That's okay. But you made sure of it. Damn it.
Yeah. It's just,
so I think overall we were very positive about A Quiet Place 2 and Cruella, which is a wonderful turn here for streaming things.
Do you guys have a preference? Which one's better?
Andy's laughing.
Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place 2 is the better movie, I think, for sure. But I really don't want to take too much away from Cruella
because they're very different.
I think over time I'm going to like it more. Like this is going to be, I'm going to read a review of somebody just really shitting all over it. And I'm going to decide there and then to stake that as the hill I'm going to die on this year and say, nay. Yeah.
Hey.
Don't say that. I'm going to write him a scathing email and say, darling, you are simply uncultured and do not understand. Whatever.
Swine.
I'll come up with it at the time. I'm a really fast typer. But yeah, I obviously, technically, the prowess-wise.
Steve, did you like stronger. Cruella better?
No, I liked A Quiet Place Part 2 better. I just thought that would be interesting.
I don't even know that that's a fair comparison.
Because they're completely different movies, Steve.
Apples to oranges. Why the fuck can't you compare fruit?
They're both fruit.
One's a very methodical, slow-burning horror film,
and the other one's A Quiet Place too.
I was more pleasantly surprised by Cruella for sure. I was confident that I was going to enjoy A Quiet Place Part 2. Cruella, I was not.
Yeah, because like I said, I've been vehemently against the live action animated thing, so I was not really, you know, I thought like it might be okay at best, but I was like surprised, like, oh, this is actually pretty good. I would watch this again. Hell so yeah.
If you stake your movie watching plans on the opinions of us here at Streaming Things, first, may God have mercy on your soul. And second, we do support you going to see A Quiet Place 2 and checking out Cruella on Disney Plus. So take that for what you will.
You can see it in theaters too, right?
Yes, really? You can.
Yeah. That'd be weird if they were like, oh, nope, plus. Oh.
Plus.
Plus or deuce.
Plus or deuces.
This is a plus exclus.
Nice.
There you go.
Disney plus exclus.
Walt Disney, get us on the horn. Let Andy write your marketing strat.
Damn it, we're good. I think that's about all the time we have for this week. Again, don't forget to email streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @CMichaelWrights, Andy
@AndyMostDays.
And of course, Steve the legend. May
13.
That's right, which is not his Venmo.
You know my Venmo now.
So. I do. And I'm not going to say it, even though they could just send you money. I'm pretty sure is all they could do with that info.
Or request it. Yeah, I just get a bunch of requests. Steve May one.
That's all we got. That's all we got time for this week. Love you. Happy streaming.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.